Members, we don't have a gavel, but I'm going to use my name tag here. No gavel aboard, so you really have to, you've really got to be at good behavior today because I can't gavel you down. Members, we have before us House File 2800, Representative Leader, and this is before us for one reason only. We are not the Transportation Committee. I don't want to debate transportation, but there is one issue, and that is, the local bridge replacement and rehabilitation and the local road improvement program, which are in this bill. They are on page 11 and 12 of this bill, and they are really the only appropriate portion of the bill that that we should be debating, and so Representative Leader will present that to us. I think Representative Tinglestad might have one other question about one other portion of the bill, but we're going to be pretty focused on page 11, subdivision 8, and subdivision 9, 11 and 12. Representative Leader moves House File 2800, and this will pass from this committee, Representative Carlson, to the Finance Committee. Is that correct? That would be the motion. The motion is to refer it to the Finance Committee. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, House File 2800 deals with the Transportation Finance Bill, and in that bill we have the bridge bonding, both the highway, trunk highway bonds and what they call local road bonds, which are, the local road bonds are actually GO bonds, and that's because they're GO bonds, the allocation, if you want to call it, of monies come through this division. What the bill does is request $50 million in GO bonds for bridges, for local bridges, and $10 million for local road improvement, which is a category that's in the statute now. But the local road improvement monies go to what they call a safety portion of the local road improvement program. And the local bridge bond money deal with monies for local bridges that the counties get, and they get monies for engineering and environmental costs, and then also the monies are there to not leverage, but to apply federal funds, whatever need they would have for the bridges. And basically, that's kind of a short, quick summary, Madam Chair.
And Representative Leader, I'll just add one other thing, because it was something you offered to do for me. We wanted to be sure that we targeted this money and that we put enough in here to fix every fracture-critical local bridge. And so you went through every single bridge and looked at the rating, and my understanding is you had a measure more than 50 cars per day and less than 50 points on the fracture critical point system. What is the point system that you measured against? It's not fracture critical, structural.
Fracture critical, right.
Yeah. Anyway, and my understanding is you came up with a number of $48.8 million that would fix that group of bridges that meet that criteria. And so we rounded up, and that's where the number came from.
Yes, and if I may, thank you, Madam Chair. If I may, I'd explain the system that works. Actually, under the federal guidelines for inspection of bridges, they have criteria, and the criteria measure from a what they call an index from 0 to 100. And as they inspect the bridge, each different package has different application numbers. And if the numbers, when they get through inspecting a bridge, has a number, a sufficiency rating, they call it, of less than 50, that means there's something radically wrong with that bridge that should be addressed, either as a major repair, replacement, or even closing the bridge. And that's the criteria as Madam Chair spoke of, we went through the list furnished by the State Aid Division of all the bridges, and that's the list they have. Well, it's current every year. And went through what they call their structurally obsolete bridges, which are usually the ones above, well, not necessarily, but that's a different condition rating, and the ones that are fracturally critical. We took the criteria for traffic counts, basically average daily traffic count of 50 or more, and then look at their rating, and if it had less than 50, we identified that bridge and that cost, and it added up, and roughly, as Madam Chair said, it, those costs for those particular bridges, and there are way more bridges on the in there, but they, to some degree, you could always put some on the priority list, but these are the maximum priority, if you want to call it that, and that's why we rounded up to $50 million.
So we didn't really want to just pick a number out of the air. We wanted it to be meaningful. So that is the one piece, and then I think Representative Singelstad had one other portion of the bill. She wanted to see if it was relevant to any question we might have.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I actually have a question on this page, but maybe once we're done with this section, I have a question on page 35, section 7, and how that might fall within our purview. But, Madam Chair, to this section here, page 11, subdivisions 8 and 9, I know that in past bonding bills, and Chairman Leader, we've looked at roads of, rural roads safety account and roads of regional significance. And so I'm wondering, between the bonding, the capital investment bill, and the transportation bill, will that occur someplace? Or I know you mentioned local bridges and local road improvements, and having never served on transportation, all these titles are kind of coming together here, but maybe you could clarify which account, and will it be somewhere else? Am I missing something?
So specifically the one then about local road improvement, which we didn't speak to, but the categories that might be in there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Singelstad, if I understand your question, you want to know which account and why it isn't there. And the easy answer, I think you're concerned about why you didn't see the category for regional roads or something.
Yeah, roads
that's not funded anymore other than what they would have in the balance. It's not. We took the $10 million and put it in the safety account. That comes under that same category, and that's why you don't see it. We didn't lose it, but it isn't funded as it had been in the past. It could be under that local road improvement program. But the $50 million under the local bridge, and the other $10 million under that local road improvement, which had three accounts. It's got roads of regional significance and safety one, and I think there's one other. I've got my backups here, you know. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Burris.
I'm missing one, aren't I? No, I think it's three in there.
Madam Chair and members, actually, I might defer to my colleague on recalling what that third one is.
And it may not be, but I think there's a third one.
Representative Junkie might be prepared.
No,
oh, no, yours is a
question.
But anyhow, there are three categories in there, and we didn't have enough money. We funded the one which seemed to be the critical one. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, just to the same section and a couple other projects, Representative Leader, and just for the committee, obviously we toured the Mankato building, so I'm clicking things off my list that we toured, and so that's in here. Someone made the decision to put that in, so if the committee isn't happy with that, I think we can have the say at this point, too. But I shouldn't even say it, but I've never liked. Are these all bonding? Yeah. All right.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Which I've never been a fan of, but I know they need to get that done. And the other one is the local road improvement. The Great River Road.
Oh, okay, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader and or staff or whoever is that, or the Great River Road, is that the Minneapolis Parkway that
no.
we were riding? What is that?
No.
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, the Great River Road is a scenic road designation or a historical designation by the feds, and what this money would provide, they have, if you drive and you see these historic monuments or markers, they're pretty well beat up. And being a septennial year, they thought they should be fixed up. And that money would provide all those markers and monuments to be repaired.
And it runs from where to where?
It actually starts at Lake Atasca and goes down to Mississippi all the way down to New Orleans.
So we can count these as Solberg projects.
Right?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
No.
You know, we're going to have to open his eyes. It's the difference between Itasca County and Itasca State Park. Like about 100 miles.
So, yes, that does run the length of the country.
I have no more statements unless it's questions, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Representative
Holbert? Question, I think. And that is, for staff, in here there's no allocation for debt service. And so you will be carrying that in your bill, the debt service, into this as well. There's $60,000 for expenses of the sale, but not for the debt service. So just as a heads up, you'll be scared. And I've asked the commissioner, when they submit their supplemental budget, to recalculate the interest rates. If the interest rates of those have dropped, we may have, debt service may have dropped a little bit too.
Representative Lanning?
He said that they would do that.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question may relate to Representative Solberg's question. I want to make sure I understand this. The 50 and million and 10 million that you're proposing in GO, is that on top of what else we might do as a capital investment committee, or is it intended to replace what we might do for local roads and bridges? I'm unclear as to what the intent here is.
Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, that's a total. We usually just bond for that amount, usually the bonding cycle. So that's the total they would get for local bridges, other than if there's some matching money from somewhere else. But as far as money that the state puts in, right now, unless there are other bills that would come through, it's $50 million for bridges and $10 million for that local road improvement, which is broken down into the safety account for the local roads. That only applies to county state aid highways on that one.
And I think it would...
The bridges go for townships and county roads and city streets, if you... But the local road improvement is strictly for county state aid highway.
And I think it would be important to observe, it does mean the size of our bill comes down.
Yeah.
In other words, should this bill go forward and pass, that we would obviously have to decrease the size of our bill.
Madam Chair, if I may, in that same light, whether it's in the transportation finance bill or this way, it doesn't decrease the funding. The funding's the same, but it decreases the source of funding, which committee it's in.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear about that, then, it will lower our amount by the $60 million, but it's still being counted towards the 3%. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to follow up the Representative Solberg's question here, is there a different way in which that bond principal and interest is going to be paid back than what we normally would do?
No, and Representative Leader, I think you have told me that we used to actually do this. We carried the local road and bridge bonding in the transportation bill, but it hasn't always been the case that it appeared in the capital investment bill. Maybe you can give us some history.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The bridge bonding and the trunk highway bonding were always in the transportation finance bill. And the difference between the reason it came back, I suppose, because it actually affects the GO or your general fund account, and because the capital investment basically always has general fund monies. The big difference, and maybe if I could just explain, trunk highway bonds do not have to worry about the 3% limit. And the trunk highway bonds can only be used for trunk highway projects, whereas the other GO bonds are restricted. They technically could use them for trunk highways, but we've never done that. But they were always in the transportation finance bill for a number of years. I think in the last 6-7 years, I think were transferred to the capital investment bill for some reason. And that's... Does that answer your question, Representative Moore?
Yeah.
Or Lanning?
Yeah.
Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to follow up with that then, the difference with the general obligation bonds and trunk highway bonds, so with this House File 2800, How many votes does it need on the House floor?
It'll need 81. It becomes a bonding bill.
It becomes. We need 81, and that's correct, Madam Chair. In the Transportation Finance, we need 81 votes for that reason.
Right. And then just a quick follow-up. I think it's kind of interesting that we're hearing this on Valentine's Day because I feel like we're joining sort of the transportation issue with our capital investment issue and figuring out how they fit together, but they'll be separate in the long run. I don't know. So it's been an interesting process to watch this. Thank you.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. I think it's follow-up, probably a repetitive question. I'm looking at pages 10, 11, and 12, and I'm seeing projects which I always understood were in the bonding request. I see 35W Interstate Highway, item 10-7, for $25 million. And then I see the Mankato headquarters, I see the Chaska truck station, I see the Maple Grove truck station, I see the local bridges, which item 11-20, abandoned existing bridge is probably my bike path over from Bloomington to Burnsville. I mean, I'm seeing these things that are in, I've always thought of them in the capital bonding bill, now they're in the transportation bill. Has that created a vacuum in the bonding bill that will be filled with something else? Because the transportation bill is not going to be restricted to the 3%, because it's going to have funding sources. The bonding bill, those items in there, the agencies, local governments, are going to be restricted to the 3%. I'm hearing two different stories, and I'm not sure I understand them.
Members, you may remember in our bill last year, the Mankato headquarters and the MnDOT building were actually in both bills. They were in the transportation bill that was vetoed, and they were then also in the bonding bill that was vetoed. In this case, even if we did them with CO bonds, we discovered they would have to be in the internal MnDOT bookkeeping. They would still pay for them with trunk highway bonds, and so we said, well, if that's the case, then we should fund them with trunk highway bonds. So actually last year the Mankato headquarters and MnDOT were in both of our bills. Representative Leader can speak to the others. I think our hope is as much as possible to say if they're trunk highway bonds, they should be in your bill.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And Representative Peterson, the park you see with the urban partnership, that's that portion that's outside of the trunk highway bonds. We also have it in our, wait a minute, we're looking at my bill, or not my bill, but transportation.
Right, I'm looking at
those
it.
Are trunk highway obligations portion of the UPA. The other portion is funded with general fund money. And the same thing in the past, it's always been, as Representative Junkie doesn't care for, trunk highway buildings will always come under trunk highway bonding. So that's why I forget, we're looking at our transportation finance bill, not at the capital improvement
right.
bill. So those are trunk highway bonds for the Mankato buildings, for the repair of the exterior of the MnDOT building. And I think we usually had a lot of little truck stations. We got one, I think there's another one in here. But those were always historically paid for it with trunk highway funds or trunk highway bonds, and that's why they're in this transportation finance bill.
But help me, understand, by pulling them in to the transportation bill so that they're no longer residing in the capital improvement bill. You've pulled them over there. So are we going to be able to take the capital bill and do more projects because we don't have these obligations? Can I do the sewer at Nordholm? I think that's always a question, saying, well, if you're taking in the transportation bill, are you creating a vacuum in the capital bill that will allow more bonding for agency or local government? That is a confusion that I'm hearing all the time.
I wish that were the case, and of course it's up to this committee, but I think we are respecting the size of the GO bonds that the governor is laying out for us. So if we've moved roads and bridges to transportation, we are acknowledging that, and we are going to lower the size of our capital investment bill.
If they, let me follow up.
For GEO bonds.
Mr. Silver is going to help me. So if the transportation bill does not pass, are these things going to come, have to be like a carrier pigeon and come back into the nest of the bonding?
Well,
Madam
Chair, Representative Peterson, traditionally these types of bonds that are paid for by truck highway funds have been carried in a couple of places. And there's no rule that says where it has to be carried. As the Chair said, last year they were carried in two particular bills. If they could be, or they could be just dropped to the wayside as well. But if they're carried in, let's say if we bring them over to the capital investment bill, they're not counted against the 3% because they're paid for with another source of money other than the general fund. And even if we funded them with GO bonds, as the Chair said, they would be end up paid for with truck highway funds because of the internal markings that were working of the within the government itself. So they would automatically come out of truck highway funds to pay off the GO bonds. So you might as well count them as truck highway funds to begin with, because that's where the source of the funding comes from.
Madam
so
Chair.
It doesn't increase or decrease. The only thing that you need to worry about here is the 50 and the 10. And that part will be counted towards the
3%. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, the reason they weren't two bills, a lot of times the transportation finance bill has a lot of things that the governor didn't like and may be to it. So we take those portions out of the trunk highway bonds that we put in two because normally they're not that, they don't cause a problem with the governor, and we need to do it. Like, actually, this Mankato thing has been kicked around for about 10 years for the simple reason. So now we've been trying to protect it, and generally the governor has no objection to it. But if you don't have it two places, and the transportation finance bill is defeated, it's dead. That's the real problem we got. So you put it two places for that reason. But it's only effective with one after it gets done if one of the bills passes.
Further questions?
I wish I was smart enough to know the question to ask, Madam Chair.
Maybe I'll come. Representative Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question might be to you or to Representative Leader. And it's about the GO bonds for local bridges and local roads. And I very much appreciate the fact that we have prioritized the $48 million of the local bridges that need it most. And my question is, are there other bridge projects that certainly merit funding now and that could use the funding this year in this bonding or transportation bill?
Senator Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Burns, there are two factors there. You talked about trunk highways and also local bridge bonds. But the local bridge bonds, I forget the exact number, but speaking with state aid, they have a criteria that says they roughly would need, with all matching monies and everything, I think it's $125 million a year. Actually, we have $50 million, and there are three ways that they can get matching monies, which they always do. They rarely pay. A county rarely pays anything, hardly, if they have any funds left. But they get state aid bonds, they get federal monies and local monies. So, but the criteria that we have here takes care of basically this biennium. And it depends on how far down you go with the fracture critical or what we call structurally obsolete. But basically, state aid recognizes that they can take care of the problems they had. And in looking at the resolutions from the counties that they had in 2008, for what they wanted to program, that would take care of that too. But it doesn't. And also in the trunk highway bond, trunk highways, there are way more bond or bridges listed, as you are aware. But in effect, the 13 major fracture critical bridges cost, would, according to the department figures, cost roughly $660 million. And they can normally get federal funds. Depends on if they're out of the, what they call the formula funds, but there are also other categorical aids sometimes that are available for competitive if you got matching money.
members.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Leader. I guess I would just make a comment, and I know the governor had significantly more, I think it was $175 million more in local bridges, and I think $20 million more in local roads, and I hope that as the bonding bill comes forward, that we get a chance to consider getting further down the list, and that we consider some of that in our bonding bill.
Madam Chair, could I speak to that? Representative John, actually, I think what happened, somehow or in the process, the governor identified them as local bridges. He doesn't identify any trunk highway bridges, and that's the problem. I think probably there should have been some trunk highway bridges, at least the wording there, because I think he probably meant 225. I'm just thinking that because the big need should be priority would be your big bridges like the Lafayette, the Hastings, and those, and they're not local bridges. So we're assuming that that number probably should have overlapped the trunk highway.
Further questions?
No, thank you.
And I will just say, members, I tried for a few weeks, because I have a lot of people in my office and traveled around the state, to help people understand some bridges are going to be here and some bridges here, and these bridges do this and these do this. And the confusion people have about that is such that partly as a way to interpret this, we're fixing all bridges. We're going to fix local bridges and we're going to fix trunk highway bridges. And to accomplish that in a single message, we just hope that that helps the communication of this. So many people thought we were fixing the 13 fracture critical bridges, the big ones, Hastings and Lafayette. And when we said no, then the confusion set in, so we thought, okay, if we put them in the same bill, we say in this bill we are fixing local bridges and trunk highway bridges. And it's hopefully a way of communicating that better to the public. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to make certain again, I spoke about the Lafayette or the Hastings. We don't identify bridges. The criteria is there that it accommodates what we call a fracture critical, and the criteria is in our bill for that. So we don't identify bridges. That doesn't mean they're going to build the Lafayette Bridge now, but it means the monies are there that they can build those, particularly 13 bridges. Most of those are over a quarter mile long, or pretty high-priced bridges. They're over $100 million, probably $200 to $300. And if you consider the normal highway construction portion of the budget, it roughly runs every year about $500 to $600 million. So out of their normal budget, if they took one bridge, that pretty much would knock heck out of their budget, and there'd be a lot of people in the state really making a lot of noise. And you can see why it's been difficult for the highway department to program the large bridges, because it's just they haven't had the money that would affect the rest of their program.
No.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Leader. The first question I have deals with the same section. We talk about fixing up these bridges, and we use the term fracture critical and structurally deficient kind of interchangeably. But as I look at the bill, line 11.10 says money to replace or rehabilitate local deficient bridges. But it doesn't say structurally deficient below a certain number, but you said that the Transportation Department has developed specific criteria for which bridges are going to fit into this criteria and which aren't, but I don't see any criteria other than the word deficient in the bill. Could you talk a little bit about how they decide what that is and how that splits up between between those two engineering terms?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Dean, because they're local bridges, the final decision is made by the county board. It's not made by the MnDOT. They have criteria which is reviewed annually and is a listing as far as priorities go. And once the county board, with the townships, they go through their process in the local regional development commission. In fact, no, they're out of it. The RDCs are out of it now. But the final decision of which bridge should be built, according to these criteria. That's the only thing the state aid division would check, if they're fracture critical or structurally obsolete. And they really don't have the power to tell the county board they can't build that bridge. The decision is made by the county board and on the local bridges. Does that answer your question? That's why technically a deficient bridge could be structurally obsolete or deficient, or it could be fracture critical on a local bridge system. But when we analyzed them, we specifically went to make certain we could address all the fracture critical bridges.
And Madam Chair, Representative Leader, the term fracture critical is a term that's used to describe a structure of a bridge that has non-redundant members. Isn't that correct?
Basically, Madam Chair and Representative Dean, that's correct. And it also is identified based on the federal rating system for inspections. Like I say, it has to be sufficiency rating of less than 50 from that 0 to 50 index.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, that I think that when we appropriate a $50 million appropriation for this, and I think it would be that most folks would want to know whether or not that could fix all of the bridges that need fixing, and I think that that's probably incorrect. There's a lot of bridges that are termed structurally deficient that are probably very safe. There's probably a lot of other bridges that need help faster, so I'm a little concerned that we haven't added any metrics that say exactly how are we going to appropriate the $50 million so that the bridges that are in most in need get it first. So that was a comment, I guess, more than anything else, and something that we might want to take another whack at down the road in communicating with constituents. The other question I had was on page, it's in another section, it's section 7, page 35, and you can, this is outside of the area that we were talking about, but you can perhaps, Madam Chair or Representative Leader can tell me why that this wouldn't fit within the purview of the Capital Investment Committee. But within that, we are...
And you're referencing lines 35, 31, 32, 33, I believe, right?
Yes.
I think Representative Singelstad had that question earlier, too.
Yes. And what we're doing, it says the County Regional Railroad Authority may not contribute more than 10% of the capital cost of a light rail transit or commuter rail project. So what we're saying here is that the local authorities can only do 10% of the cost of the project. So are we, in effect, looking at taking 90% of the capital cost as a legacy cost of this particular bill and saying that that has to come from somewhere else? Primarily, I would imagine it would come from the state bonding committee, so that this would, in effect, affect future bonding requests that would come to this committee for such projects. And I think that at least is a question that deserves an answer of, if we are capping the local contribution, where is that money going to come from? Who's going to pay it? Is it going to be us? Is it going to be some other source? I would imagine that the brunt of that cost would be, the uptake would be within this committee.
And actually, then you do have to think of the broader context of the bill. Because in this bill, they raise a half-cent sales tax for transit. The assumption is, whereas in the past we might have paid for some of this on property taxes, in a sense we're shifting from property tax dependency for transit to the half-cent sales tax. That's the new revenue we raise and are shifting, really, which tax we're dependent on. Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, that's correct. That's the rationale. Supposedly, that's going to be picked up by the sales tax. One of the problems we had, you probably are aware, Representative Dean, is that in the past, some of the counties went on their own and spent a lot of money before it really got organized, and they want to limit this so we don't have everybody. I believe that's my understanding, ask Mr. Burris. But some of the counties got way out front spending a lot of money, and sometimes that would pit one project against another where they hadn't spent that kind of money, and this precludes that fact to some degree. And I kind of, the rationale is my understanding, the county boards, the Metro County boards met with myself and Senator Murphy going through this, and with Representative Hornstein and the Metro people. That's kind of what they wanted, and I think that was basically a balancing act, but maybe I don't have it all. I'd like to, if I could defer, but I think that was the rationale.
That does sort of acknowledge that they're raising a half-cent sales tax in the 7 county metro area.
And Madam Chair, do we have any projection of how much money that half-cent sales tax would raise, and does that, in fact, fill the void between what the DOT says that they need and what we're going to be providing?
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, Ms. Zewers would have that available.
Having been also on the Transportation Committee, I can tell you they have printouts of every question you have. And they do have printouts of this as well. Ms. Zewers.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, the 0.5% metro sales tax would raise about $1.13 billion over 10 years. And in comparison to the Metropolitan Transit Plan, that would cover their current plan. But they are revising their plan, I believe, currently, and that should be available in the next few months.
Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Dean?
No, thank you.
Representative Peterson.
I'm sure, while Mr. Leader is here, I'd like to ask this question to clear up some confusion. There's a part of the bill that says that the revenue from the sales tax now begins to pay for the operating costs of the rail. What is the benefit of that to Hennepin County, of which I'm a part of?
Madam Chair, that's correct. I'll refer that to Mr. Burris. One thing we had in the bill, I think maybe you were aware before, there was a different number. We changed that number based on changes within here, but I'll let Mr. Burris clear that up.
Because I know people can look at the fact that this source of money picks up the operating costs of transit. You can talk about it as a criticism, or you could talk about it as a beneficiary of taxpayers in areas that are now picking up that operating risk. Am I wording it right, Mr. Byrne? I'm just trying to say, is the fact that this bill is taking over operating costs of transit, is that a plus or a minus for the taxpayers of Hennepin County?
Mr. Byrne.
Madam Chair, Matt Burris with Health Research. Madam Chair and members, I can't speak to that policy question. What's in the bill currently includes in the metro area sales tax the requirement that a portion of the proceeds for fiscal year 09 go to the Metropolitan Council, and my understanding of the intent behind that is that it would cover the operating costs that would otherwise have been paid by Hennepin County for Hiawatha Light Rail. Going forward, there's nothing explicit in the language on the metro area sales tax stating how that funding would work, but it's my general understanding that transit is built in as one of the types of purposes that would be funded under the metro sales tax. So it's my understanding that would be one of the types of grant awards that could be made by the Joint Powers Board that administers those funds.
And the follow-up again is, if the bill does not pass, the operating expense of the Hiawatha line remains the responsibility of whom?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, the operating expense burden wouldn't shift from how it stands currently, which would be a portion being paid by Hennepin County and a portion being paid by Met Council through a couple of different funding sources.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm going back to Representative Dean's original point. I think it was a good one, and he left just a hair too soon because he didn't get the answer I want. Representative Leader, you laid out, we've had the Department of Finance on behalf of the governor throw a pile of money towards bridges, and we really are yet to discover how they came up with that. You, Madam Chair, had another list at one time that didn't match that list. And so, to your credit, our former county engineer sat down with the local roads and bridges people at MnDOT and went through the actual list. And then you scored them based on a score of less than 50 and based on a traffic count of under a certain amount. And I think that's what Representative Dean was asking. Where in this bill does it say when you hand that pot of money to MnDOT,
that those critical bridges that you've scored and went through all the trouble of doing this, that that's what the money will actually be used for. I don't see that in here. I don't have that comfort just handing that money over and saying, well, here's your local bridge money. Hopefully you use it for those that are scoring under 50 and under 5 traffic counts. So do we have to put that language in? You say, well, the counties decide. Well, no. Only if they've got the bridges that score under 50, they can apply for that money. But again, where does it say, where's the instructions to MnDOT that that's what's going to be covered? That this 50 doesn't go to less critical bridges or anything else? Because you specifically scored and had an accounting on, because that's the question we've all been asking. You know, is $200 million? Is it $100 million? Is it $50 million? What is it? Because typically in a year, we don't see the kind of bill that we saw come out of the governor's office, and we weren't able to get that account. You did a good job, but how do we now take that? And that's what I think Representative Dean was asked. How do we take that and make sure that these bridges get fixed? That's our key.
So I think the question, Representative Leader, when we give this money to MnDOT, do we are we assured that MnDOT targets that to the most critical needs?
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, in the past we gave as high as $20 million for the biennium, no strings attached. We didn't know what to do. And basically, the state aid division doesn't have criteria which they go through. They have some, they work it out, and it generally works out. And I feel confident that they will do the same thing. For the most part, because there's not enough money in it generally to fix all bridges, they fix the most critical ones, in my opinion. And that's why we hate to, I think it's, in my opinion, again, it's not good policy to identify particular bridges for the legislature. You start getting the political arm in there, and that's where we don't want to be.
And maybe, Madam Chair, just for comfort, and obviously you have the list, $48 million, you can provide that the way you scored them.
And the other thing, too, if I may, Representative Junkie, that list varies throughout the year, 2-3 times probably, as a if one bridge might deteriorate and get fixed, but that's the current bridge that I had list from them.
So, Madam Chair, at least having that list will be, yeah. So we're understanding where you suppose the money goes, and I've got confidence that the local folks over in MnDOT will respect that and work with you and us on that. All right.
And members who don't know Representative Leader as well as I may not know this about him historically. He does resist writing individual projects in to build for fear that that's a domino effect that would have no end, and so believes that that the department has knowledge of that set of criteria. So, I see no representative interest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of quick ones. I was just looking at effective dates in the bill, and I understand with the sales tax and other pieces, there would be kind of a delay in starting the collection and when the money could go out. But I understand with this $60 million we're looking at with GEO, that would be administered in kind of the typical way. I'm looking at the bottom of page 12. So maybe if staff could comment on that. But what caught my eye was a top of page 13, line 4, 13.4, where it talks about a bond issue of, is that $2.2 billion, I believe?
Billion.
You don't see the numbers with all the zeros in it, but I don't know, maybe a staff or maybe Representative Solberg.
These are the trunk highway bonds, Representative Leader, that you may just want to reference.
That's correct, Madam Chair. I'm sure I didn't get quite the question.
Well, line 13.4 is basically my first question.
The issue, that's the total for the 10 years for the trunk highway bonds.
Okay.
And it also includes, Mr. Bursich, correct, there's some cost involved for the, we got 2,200. That's some cost involved in them. Yeah. That's for bond sale expense, that's what I'm trying to say in there, right? So that's included in the bond issue. And again, those bonds are sold as the department, you know, as they see they need them. They don't sell them all at one time.
Right.
Mr. Colbert?
The general obligation on the bonds, the effective date, we think we should probably have counsel give us some guidance on that, Madam Chair, and see if, make sure we have it correct in here.
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, in the capital investment bill, we typically have an effective date that says effective the day following final enactment, and I don't see it in this article or an effective date for the whole bill that would make it effective immediately, and since it's an appropriations bill, I assume then it would be July 1st that it would be effective.
That may be an amendment you want to prepare for finance?
Do you want to address that?
Okay. Thank you. And then I think Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Leader, maybe this has already come by us here, but the question of how much, you know, how many bridges could be done with the $50 million obviously depends on the size of the bridge and whatever, but of these 13 deficient bridges that you've identified, would they be covered by that $50 million, or how many of them? What would you suppose?
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, those 13 bridges are trunk highway bridges. They're not in this $50 million. They're in that, I don't know if I did explain this, but in the Transportation Finance Bill, the bonding authority would be $500 million the first year and $500 million the second year. Of the $500 each year, $300 million is set aside for a trunk highway bridge bond. That would be $600 million. That's where those 13 are coming from.
And to interpret members, I mean, because I think it is confusing to the public. And so here's the number. You can tell your constituents that $650 million in the next 2 years
right.
will fix what we believe are both local and trunk highway bond dangerous bridges. Would that be fair, Representative Leader? $650 million for bridges
2 years.
Over 2 years.
The only difference we'd have, it could fix if they, if that's the way they do it.
If
the money's
MnDOT,
are available
MnDOT
to do that, but it doesn't mean
right.
that necessarily.
We're trusting MnDOT.
Yeah. We don't want to be careful and say they're going to fix it, but it's up to the, basically with the criteria and stuff they have.
Yeah.
The money's are available to fix all the fracture critical bridges in the categories which I described.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then, on the other, the $50 million that would be local bridges under this, do you have any idea how many bridges that would affect?
Some leader.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I haven't, I never counted them, to be honest with you. I just looked at the numbers and I didn't, because there's a whole series. I can certainly do that. I mean, I just didn't go down and count the numbers.
Okay, thank you.
There's a lot of variance in those local bridge costs. You know, some of them can be. There are nine bridges that are over $1 million in the local bridges, and the one, and those are generally over 100 feet long. There are a lot of bridges that are 50,000, 60,000. Most of them, I think, would average $100,000 a piece, basically, somewhere in that neighborhood.
$50 million will fix a lot of $100,000 bridges.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that is probably I shouldn't talk about, but in the local bridges, there are two sections in the town bridge account and local bridge account. A bridge is considered, in one of the accounts, is that anything that's over 20 foot, and the next account and town bridges sometimes are 10 foot. And then you hear somebody saying, well, there's culverts put in there, and that's correct. You say, if it's a culvert, why do you need bridge money? Because the culvert is not just a little 50-inch thing. When we talk culverts, they're box culverts, or they're big. Some of them are 15, 20 feet arch metal culverts. So that's why, and then you don't have any guardrail or anything top. So a lot of small bridges are replaced with multiple box culverts or multiple other types, and they're called culverts. But I know when people say they're replacing bridges with culverts, I've had people ask me, why should you do that? But that does provide the capacity of the structure, the waterway open, determines how much if they're qualifying under this bridge money. And I think that's what you're concerned too, right?
Thank you.
I think. Representative Riccovina?
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, on page 33, you're just
rearranging the surcharge dollar amounts, other than the traumatic brain injury increase, you're really not doing anything there. Substantive, right?
May I ask which line are you?
Well, I'm line 33.32 and 233.34. If I read it right, you're not increasing the surcharge. The only thing that's increasing is the traumatic brain injury fund. Is that correct?
Did I have Mr. Burris? Did you sign
Page 36. Did you get the reference?
Yeah.
Mr. Burris?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Bucandino, that's correct. The overall amount doesn't change. This provision changes how that reinstatement fee is paid. Instead of having to be paid entirely up front, it allows payment in installments.
And Madam Chair, finally, Representative Leader, where in the bill is the restriction that the 40 troopers can't go north of Highway 2? Seriously, I don't... I have troopers all over the place, and I don't understand why they're needed, first of all. Secondly, if they are, keep them down here. I think there might represent... You make the amendment for finance, and I'll support it, as will a number of other rural legislators who have contacted me on it, and some Republicans who don't support it at all. So,
we're probably going a little far afield of bonding, but...
Well, that's what we can do that in finance.
Yes, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking. I couldn't hear where that voice was. I was being blocked out. I couldn't find him. But anyhow, what I knew it subject was, I knew where it was.
But what one thing that's happening right now, the troopers do not have a school, so they have a retirement, but they have no replacements coming in. That's one of the big things with the normal turnover and retirement. Normally, they've had a trooper school, sometimes two trooper schools a year, but because of finances, they haven't run it. So this would allow them to have a trooper school, basically, too.
Madam Chair, I read it as additional, means additional.
Yeah.
So, Representative, you keep your promise, Representative Levine.
Representative Peterson, did I see one final?
It may be inappropriate, and you can cut me off if you want to, but Mr. Leader is at the podium, and I want to ask it. The comment was made that the bill provides $650 million for bridges over the next 2 years. Of course, my mind right away, since I've sat in some of your hearings, you're going through an awful lot of problem with escalating costs. And if we don't do something in 2 years, what happens escalating in prices? Because the escalation in cost doesn't go away, even if we choose not to do anything. If we turn the bill down, those escalating costs for those repairs can continue. And it's probably not appropriate in this committee, but I was dying to ask you that question last night, but I was had to sit up there, so I couldn't ask it.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, you're correct. It seems to me that the construction costs have gone up 47%. I think that was 5 years ago, it was less. And what you're indicating, that would knock this all out of kilter. And the rationale to upfront these monies, 300 and 300, was to avoid that. And the thing that could be avoided, and we're not suggesting it, MnDOT, you know, they have to prepare plans right away and all that stuff. But the monies would be there to do it. But right now, if you look at their program, if they have programmed one of these, what I call a major structure, $200 to $300 million, that's way off in the future. And that by the time they do it, is really going to be, as you indicate, much higher. So that's why I think it's the other initiative, and the governor spoke about it, and I think it's been a concern of the legislators, is the fact if we are in that type of recession now, you want to get early money out there, something you can do right away. For most cases, whether it's local bridges or even trunk highway bridges, if the money is available, some of those bridges would be able to be let. I'm not saying all of them, but at least initially, I think there's plans laying there. I know there are in the local bridges. They could wipe that out right off the bat. So that means that would be an incentive to stimulate the economy. And I think that's maybe a question you're implying, too. Does that answer?
It does, but then my head says, what if we don't? We end up without a bill. The problem, the cost, that doesn't go away.
That's Madam Chair and Representative Peterson.
That's the real problem. That's a real concern with MnDOT, because, again, how do they program those major structures? I don't know where it is in their program. It's pretty far down. They have a, you know, a 3, a 5, and beyond. They've got a 20-year. Where does it fit in? And it's pretty hard to, for them to program when they don't know the money isn't going to be there. It's not going to be there. And that's the real impetus for getting this bill passed.
Representative Leader renews his motion that House File Number 2800 be passed and re-referred to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill will be heard next in the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Members, we're going to go to Mr. Wayne Hurley because he tells us he can do this in about 10 minutes, and that still will allow us to hear from the Finance Department and hopefully finish up the governor's bill. But I don't have to remind you, as we travel the state, all of the wastewater infrastructure project we saw, and we always talked about what's happening out there, and Representative Lanning referenced in his part of the state, in fact, an infrastructure study and an infrastructure pilot project, so we thought, let's hear about this. So, Mr. Hurley, welcome to the committee, and we'll give you our attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I told Ms. Nash I could do it in five minutes, so I'm going to try to be as brief as I can. Still get you the information. My name is Wayne Hurley. I am the planning director for West Central Initiative. We're a regional foundation located in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, covering a 9-county region in West Central Minnesota, including the counties of Becker, Clay, Douglas, Grant, Otter Tail, Pope, Stevens, Traverse, and Wilkin, just to give you a sense of the geographic area that we're working in. 5 years ago, West Central Initiative did an infrastructure study of all 83 communities in our 9-county area. And that was basically a broad overview, looking at what the underground infrastructure needs were. So we're talking about water, drinking water, wastewater, storm sewer, those types of infrastructure systems, not the roads and highways and bridges that the committee was talking about just recently. The results of that study were that there are significant needs. And did the committee get... There was a handout. I'll be referring to this piece of paper a little bit as we go through this. There are more than $800 million in needs in our region alone over the next 20 years. And this was as of 5 years ago. Over half of those were immediate needs for systems that were failing at the time, 5 years ago. You can assume that 5 years has passed and that number has probably gone up. As a result of this study, there were a number of recommendations that were made. We also extrapolated the results to the rest of the state, and the number there, if you look out over the 20-year time horizon, it surpasses about $7 billion across the state, excluding the 7-county metropolitan area. There are, fortunately, a number of other less cost impacted solutions that could be implemented that would have significant impacts on this problem in the state, and a number of those include things like education, training for personnel, coordination between agencies, permitting and contact planning assistance, those types of things. Because there are a number of things that we could affect as an organization in West Central Minnesota, we embarked on an infrastructure pilot project just this late last year in 2007. We are working with an organization, Yellowwood Associates. They are located in Vermont, and also with a couple of engineering firms in our region, and looking specifically in depth at three communities in our region, and the communities are listed on the top of the sheet on the right-hand side. Battle Lake, Brandon, and Otter Tail are the three communities that we're going to be working with. And what this infrastructure pilot project will do is look in depth at those three communities rather than the broad overview that we took the last time 5 years ago. We will really get down and look at what those three communities' needs are in regards to infrastructure.
So there will be individualized reports for those three communities, and we chose those three communities because they have a broad range of needs right now, ranging from extreme immediate needs to some of their systems are in pretty good shape and they're doing okay, but they need to plan for the future. And so we've got those three communities. The other project that will come out of this pilot project is an outline of the process that will be shared with the other communities in our region and will be made available to other communities throughout the state. And hopefully what we'd like to see come out of that process is for communities to have some sort of a tool that they can use to mitigate some of these infrastructure needs and hopefully alleviate and get that big number, we're talking about $7 billion in needs over the next few years, get that number down a little bit through some alternative solutions. And I won't go through the preliminary findings that are on the sheet there. I'll let you read that at your leisure. Those are very preliminary at this point. The study is still ongoing. We're still in the fairly early stages of this project. I believe it's to be completed around the middle of or late 2008. And so my guess is that our president, Nancy Strauss, she was supposed to be here today, so I apologize. That was kind of a last-minute substitution. She will probably come back and make another report next year just to give you an update.
Because at this point, you're still at the question-asking stage, it sounds like. You haven't necessarily arrived at the answers, but you're still asking the questions. And I'm just particularly intrigued. I mean, clearly there's commitment that you all want to become effective stewards of your water resources. And one of the, as I look at all your preliminary findings, one particularly jumped out at me because it was one we often felt as we were out and about. And that is the one that says, it's difficult for communities to find the information they need, even from state agencies. High quality information and technical assistance are available concerning Minnesota water resource regulations, but it is very fragmented. Technical assistance isn't always timely. So you're identifying resources that may not be there, and we were feeling some of that, I think, as we traveled around, that each community seems to kind of struggle through these things on their own.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. One of the things that Yellowwood, in their preliminary findings, found that there's a lot of information in the state of Minnesota that communities could potentially access. It's out there. Part of the problem is a lot of it is GIS data. A lot of the smaller communities, especially in rural Minnesota, don't have access to GIS software, therefore cannot access that data very easily. It becomes an issue of, if they needed to get that data, they have to hire a consultant to do it, and it gets very expensive. And as you all know, the smaller communities in our region just simply cannot afford to do those sorts of things. Also, there's overlapping information, there's redundant information across state agencies. It's never there's not one good place to go to get the information at a central location that's easily accessible for the folks that are working in these communities. And again, we're one of the primary concerns is for the very small communities that don't have full-time planning or public works staff. They're working with part-time staff, a city clerk, and maybe a public works director, who don't necessarily always know exactly where to go to find these resources. That is, yeah, very very much an issue.
And two others that sort of jump out at me: sensitivity to impacts on water resources should be part of all infrastructure standards and guidelines in Minnesota. Water and energy conservation have not been integrated into water use strategies. I mean, it's just some of those early indications that you're suggesting to us means that there really are still more questions than answers.
Madam Chair, that's correct, yes. Yellowwood is still exploring those questions in particular. Those are some of the related issues that came up. Just as a kind of an interesting example, I was speaking with the consultant earlier today, and she gave me the example of public boat accesses and the water quality issues that are created by public boat accesses in our lakes due to the fact that they're designed primarily to get boats in the water, which at first glance makes sense. But when you look at it from an environmental perspective, basically we have an entire surface parking lot that's channeled right into the lake. And so those are some of the things that they were finding in their preliminary findings.
Representative Levine.
Yes,
Thank you. I was taken by the sentence that you brought up. Why do you feel that the state agencies that have this information cannot convey it to the public?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a really good question. I don't know that I am fully prepared to answer it. I guess my personal understanding, and this I'm not speaking for the consultant because they're the ones that are actually putting the study together, so I'm not entirely certain what their findings have been. I think it has to do with the fact that state agencies tend to operate in silos, so to speak. They are working just within their own agency. They're not coordinating with other agencies that maybe share some of the same areas of interest and have the same data sets that they're working with. Just another example that was given to me by the consultant, a lot of these data sets that are out there that exist right now, you can go out there, you can find the data, but it's not cross-referenced by community. And so if you were looking for example, your watershed or a lake information or something like that, those data sets that they were able to find are not connected to anything that, again, getting back to the example of the part-time city clerk, they don't know exactly what their latitude, longitude are necessarily or something like that. So it's difficult for them to try to access that information because they can't go to a website and, say, click on the community of Brandon and have a list of resources come up that they can easily find.
If I could follow up with we had some good testimony from folks at the University of Minnesota that are working with small communities and helping them out. Have you worked with the U group on this?
Madam Chair, Representative, we, in the context of these studies, we have worked with Extension, not directly with the U. The Center for Small Towns in Morris is aware of this study. They have been interested in this study. They're not directly affiliated with it, but they are. We're in pretty close communication with them with regards to the study and some of the outcomes and some of the resources they have available.
Actually, what I was referring to are university folks from Extension that are actually working with communities to work through their wastewater needs and how to do problem solving. So it sounds like you are doing something very similar, and I was you are studying almost what they are doing, and so I was wondering if you were in contact with them.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, there has been communication between the university and some of the trainings that they're offering and the folks that are working on the study, including our office.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How much did the Yellowwood & Associates pilot project cost?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know if I have that number right in front of me. I'll try to remember. I believe it was around.
Might be something.
I'm not sure. Yeah,
it might be something that's available. You
could. It's available. All the information is available on our website, and so I don't have that number in front of me, and I apologize for that. It's around, I want to say $300,000 or thereabouts, as a guess, but I'm not certain on that.
Well, Representative Lang.
So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair, for putting this on the agenda. As we've been traveling about the state, I think we've seen the tip of the iceberg, that there are huge infrastructure needs in communities, small communities throughout greater Minnesota. And we need a better handle on what those needs are, and I'm really thankful that West Central Initiative has taken this challenge and is trying to get a handle on those needs. We also, it seems to me, need to know what the local capacity is to meet those needs and what kind of capacity the state might have to fill. My hunch is that when you combine the local capacity to meet some of these needs with the state's capacity to meet it, that we're still not going to get full funding for what is needed here to solve these problems. And that poses a real challenge for us, I think, as a capital investment. we have a role to play, and hopefully the state can help in these situations, but I suspect we're not going to be able to fix all of the problems in all of these communities. The state does not have the capacity to do that. So we really need to push forward in getting more of this kind of analysis done.
Well, I was intrigued by some of your preliminary findings. We'll be interested in staying in touch and perhaps having a return visit. And I can tell you that two members of this committee, Representative Genius and Representative Hansen, have spent a lot of time, and maybe even some mutual conversation there will be helpful. But we thank you very much for coming to be with us and to giving us a little flavor of the work, and we'll look forward to hearing close to the end of the study.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
And Commissioner Hansen, we are so sorry. I did not know that we were going to take quite so much time on the rest of the agenda. So please, and my understanding, I had to leave a little early last time, but that we were in the economic development portion of the presentation.
That is correct.
So if you can pick it up where you left off.
At least the chairs are nice and warm now. I'm sitting in. We had left off, we had talked. I don't know if everybody still has the slide packet.
Oops.
Slide 14, I had discussed.
I think we put them in everybody's
yep.
packet again.
The economic
so they
development
still have them.
Programs. And then the one thing that didn't make it onto the slide, but is near and dear to Representative Murphy's heart, the deck. And we have it under our economic development recommendations for $40 million.
I could draw a picture.
And as I think since you have the slide, I'll wait for it to get up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll,
yeah,
I'll keep
we have
talking.
Them in front of us. So.
Okay. And I meant to ask, Madam Chair, are you done it? How much time do you want me to
well,
be more specific?
Let's see what we can. Maybe the committee will just not have any questions on the last few slides. We'll see.
The next slide represents a very important priority for the governor as well as others, is the infrastructure for the Minnesota Steel Plant in Itasca County in northern Minnesota. A very exciting opportunity for an area that is much in need of jobs, and very exciting to have a steel plant in Minnesota. And with that comes various infrastructure needs that the county has put forward, that the Department of Employment and Economic Development has been taking the lead in negotiating with county officials on what the need is. And thus far, the governor's recommendations for the railroad portion to upgrade the railroad is a $6.9 million. I'll first talk about what the items are and then where we get the money. The next item is the gas pipeline to service the plant. There was a difference. The county had requested $23 million, essentially a 24-inch pipe. The gas, we recommended a 16-inch pipe. The difference between what was requested versus what the governor is recommending is the county's wanting it to be a little larger, you know, to accommodate what they anticipate to be for future economic development. We are recommending the 16-inch pipe because it saves $10 million and enough to cover the plant and perhaps a little extra. The next issue that does not reflect a number in the governor's recommendations is the substation upgrading the power lines. The county had requested $16 million, and I understand that there's ongoing discussions with the county and Minnesota Power over this issue. Normally, what happens is when there's a major customer or a more electrical lines and more power, they usually the power company goes ahead and does it and passes the cost on to the rate the customers.
In this case, we have continued our discussions over this issue. And the next issue is the water and the sewer. The county recommended 3.3, and that's what we're recommending to fund. The next issue, the roadway, needed some work done on the road. The county had asked for 15.7. We are recommending 3. Again, the issue, and the tension always is with these type of projects, is the county asks for more, and the state generally tries to focus its money in on whatever the particular project is and end up meeting somewhere in the middle. The locals asking for a larger amount, anticipating more growth, and the state trying to be good fiscal agents offering a little less. The governor's recommendations, and you can see on the slide behind me, the bill contains $6.2 in new general obligation bonding. We appropriate target $14.9 million that was appropriated to the 21st Century Mineral Funds for Economic Development. This was done in the last legislative session. And the and then another $8.9 million from the in an Iron Range Resources account for economic development. I just want to say, Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is an incredibly important project to Governor Plenty, and I know that how it is funded and exactly what is funded may not, even if we don't necessarily agree on how, this is something that we want to have happen in the end, and is one of its highest priorities in this bill. The next category we call state building and asset preservation. It's a comprehensive category covering a lot of different issues. I'll just skim over some of these. You heard in Representative Leader's presentation on his transportation bill the need to repair the MnDOT building in the Capitol complex. That is important. If you notice, we have the walkways now, covered with Kevlar, whatever, in case anything falls off the building. So after about 5 years, we probably really need it this time.
And we don't feel cavalier about that Kevlar.
I always say that wrong, Madam Chair. Kevlar. The next item, we're recommending $15.4 million for state capital building asset preservation and restoration design, targeting the money towards critical preventive maintenance. $13.4 million, $2 million of it is continued planning and design. As we took a close, hard look at this, Madam Chair, we felt a little more planning and design needed to be to look at another building somewhere on the near the Capitol or on the Capitol complex to house current occupants in the Capitol, and maybe turn and potentially have the Capitol as a building for the House and the Senate chambers, as well as leaders, and use it for ceremonial functions. If you do that, then the heating and cooling and some of the items that if you were going to keep everybody in there, you'd have to dig the big vaults, four big vaults on both sides of the Capitol, and that would cost a lot more than if you move people into a separate building and move some of that into the current structure of the building, maybe into the basement. So we felt that there wasn't enough discussion into another building nearby. The next category just represents $29 million we listed as asset preservation at other facilities. For human services, we did system-wide asset preservation and campus redevelopment. The most significant issue there is what we did not do, and the Department of Human Services put an expansion of their Moose Lake facility, what they called Phase 2. We have deferred that to, they have enough capacity in their current facilities to handle the anticipated increase in patients through the next bonding cycle, so have deferred that issue to the next bonding cycle. The Minnesota's due. We have $7.5 million, $4 million for the Purpose Center for the Arts and the State Academies, $5 million for the Historical Society, $3 million for CAPRA, and then $6 million in other state building activities. Before I move on, Madam Chair, do you have any?
I can go over any of those items.
Pressing,
right. We'll just keep pressing ahead and hope we can conclude this.
The next category is Veterans Affairs, Veterans and Military. And this is a little different in your book. It's categorized due to the governor's. The Veterans Home Board was merged into the Department of Veterans Affairs, so that's why it's listed as the Veterans Affairs Department. The main category there is $35 million to improve the Minneapolis Veterans Home, including demolishing Building 9 and constructing a new facility, and then also doing the HVAC work, which was much needed in some of the buildings. We also included a $7 million for asset preservation at veterans homes and in facilities statewide, and then $8 million in asset preservation for life safety and ADA improvements at some of the guard activities around the state. The next category, public safety and corrections. It's a $41 million category. The first item on your list, $16 million for the Faribault Correctional Facility expansion and renovation. This is an ongoing expansion of our Faribault facility. It has, it was projected as being much more, a much faster expansion. I think it's two cycles ago, but our patient population has evened out a little bit. So what we did this time is break out their needs into the what you see before you, which is the intake area, making it more safe and more what is needed. As it is now, when prisoners come in, sometimes they end up just sitting in the hallway outside the offices of the people who work there. This makes it makes it a little more safe, moves the fence. And then the second phase will come back in 2 years, the next bonding cycle, to build another K building. And I think that should end up finishing out the Faribault project. We funded $16 million in asset preservation and repairs at correctional facilities statewide. We have we put $5 million for design and construction of an emergency management training center at Camp Ripley, so local police and fire can train and prepare for natural disasters and terrorist events and the like. And then a $4 million development assistance for a Southeast Minnesota local responders training facility in Rochester. And then finally, $500,000 for pre-design of a new state emergency operations center. Our current operations center is located in the building in downtown and right above a parking ramp, and not a very good location. Violates just about every recommendation that the federal government has requested.
And the next slide, we're actually going to spend time with tomorrow. It's one of the two items on our agenda tomorrow, just because, what is it? Next week. That's right, today's Thursday. You're not here, but next Thursday?
Okay.
At any rate, I think we'll, because we're having a hearing on it, you don't need to spend a lot of time. It is a new approach, and we'll want people to have enough time.
I would expect you'd want to spend some time on it. I'd suggest having a conversation with
them. And you're certainly welcome to come back, but MHSA will.
It's probably a better, basically it's essentially, put it in a nutshell, is when you use the way the housing finance described it to us when we were putting our bill together, when you use general obligation bonding, with it comes restriction, obviously, because it's state money, and it's we have constitutional and statutory restrictions that make it difficult to serve some of the part of their population. By having them issue the bonds and the state providing the debt service. It gives them a little more flexibility in developing the housing and make it more efficient and usable for their population. So I will leave that for you.
Okay, and you're concluding just framework of the bill then?
Framework of the bill focuses again on improving the state's infrastructure with an emphasis, as you know, and as I described, on transportation. We prioritize our resources to address most urgent needs, and while we didn't, and while you don't see a lot of local projects earmarked, we have a lot of money going into programs that local units of government can compete for on merit and use for what their needs are. We do maintain the commitment to traditional state resources. We build capacity for long-term economic growth, like the U.S. Steel Plant on the range. And we invest in local needs through what I just said, through statewide programs rather than individual projects. And then we respond to one-time opportunities like the UPA. And we look forward to working with you. We're fully aware that our we put forward the recommendations, and it's a starting point. And
good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we're fully informed. And Representative Silverstein.
I won't waste your time commenting today on the steel mill proposal, but I think the entire range delegation is a little outraged with it. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Members, from time to time we receive additional information that projects ask us to distribute. You have two of those in your packet today that we received from Uppsala, and so they're there for your information. It just means somebody has passed them to us and asked would we distribute them to the committee. And as I said, the next meeting on Tuesday, we're getting the MHFA proposal. We'll have enough time to look at that and ask any questions and to get a little bit of information on the whole issue of green building design. Meeting is adjourned.